To greet you in Jesus' name this morning. It is a privilege to be here. As we were singing, I was remembering the, and I don't even know who said it, but it was a book I read about spiritual things many years ago. And the writer was talking about how native or how natural it is for us to lose our focus in our Christian faith. He said that it seems like faith, unless it is nurtured, sort of dies out on its own. And he said, for that reason, we need to go every day into the Word and refresh ourselves. And he also said, for that reason, we must consistently come together with more people of God and be refreshed by them and their faith as well. And I think it's in Jude where the Bible talks about building each other up in our most holy faith. And we do rub off on each other, and I felt that dynamic already being here this morning, and glad to be here. You open your Bibles to Titus chapter 2 for a message this morning. I recognize it is Mother's Day, and I think that as we go along, you will realize that it's not quite per se a Mother's Day message. It is a message that applies to mothers, but as far as paying the tribute that my mother and your mother deserve, I don't know that these thoughts are so much a tribute to them. And yet, this gift, this high-priced value that Jason was talking about that we have in Christian mothers is really something that is a reward even to the woman herself. Faithfulness has its own beauty and its own reward. And as we look at some of the ideals that are taught here for the Christian woman, why a woman who chooses these ideals and lives them out, as we intend to exhort this morning, will find herself getting this very tribute. It's very appropriate that we have an annual moment of tribute for our mothers, our moms. You have a job that nobody's trying to take from you because we're not sure how we get it done. They are the Leathermans of our home, you know, a tool for every occasion. It's in the pocket and you pull it out and use it right now. And then the cutting and the twisting and the opening and I just thought of all the different ways. I was looking there at my Leatherman on the desk again this morning and thinking about how many ways that mom is the Leatherman of the house. And it's a calling that we're not going to try and take from you because we're not sure we could do it anyway. And if we act like it or talk like it, don't listen to us because we don't mean it. Looking here at Titus chapter 2, I'd just like to focus on verses 3 to 5 this morning. It's a direct teaching to women. And it goes like this, verse 3. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. What we have here is an 8-point punch list or bullet point list that is qualities or characteristics that ought to be being taught to the rising generation of women by the older women, the way this reads, for them to learn and develop on their own and to possess. Now, it's kind of a strange list in the sense that, well, what's the context when you just look at it? It's a very appropriate list. It has some good points. They're all good points. But why is it there? And to understand why it's there, you have to back up to chapter 1. Let's look at verse 5 of Titus, and it's going to give you the theme of this little epistle, this book that the Apostle Paul wrote to Titus, who was a leader in the church at Crete. He says in verse 5, "For this cause I left thee in Crete, that thou shouldest set in order the things that are wanting, and ordain elders in every city, as I had appointed thee." What you're going to find in the book of Titus is it's the works of a man or the writings of a man who is helping a young leader start up a church. Now, This book here in Titus took on a whole new meaning to me when I was sent to Bangladesh this winter to a little fledging church that is forming out of Muslims, out of Hindus, out of pagans. They've never known about Jesus, and they don't know a thing about what we call church. It's all brand new. And I was told that I'm supposed to focus in my teaching on what it takes to have a solid or good or profitable congregational life. Bring these people, these new believers, together and just help them have church. You know, it's going to be here till summer. It'll be 6 years that we started having church here as us. And we, you remember those meetings where we came in and we kind of went down through, and Jason and Stephen and I made up this punch list of some things we're going to talk about. We were so loaded of what we were going to talk about because we had a whole lifetime of knowing what's typical. But I want you to peel all the traditions of your mind away, and I want you to peel away everything till you have nothing, and then I want to give you the charge of now build something. That's huge. Oh, and I'll give you a couple days to go into a land and teach somebody something. And you're going to have to go through an interpreter. And he's going to struggle to know what you're saying, and he's going to say it in his own way, and somebody else who knows the language say, he didn't even get the point. Okay, that's what we were doing in Bangladesh. But we were following the same thing that Titus was doing, and we were starting with nothing, and we were trying to build something. And what you have the book of Titus is, he goes into different, the very first thing he talks about in the beginning of Titus is how do you get leadership in place. He says, you ordain elders in every city, Paul told Titus. Now, here's what you look for in a leader. And he has this list. And we look at the list. Those of us that are leaders in the church look at this list and say, ooh, that's high. Yeah. And then we have an ordination, and we look out from among us, and we try to pull people like this. And we feel a little uneasy in the whole process. The preachers who preach about it feel uneasy because they wonder if there's anybody like that out there in their church. And they also know, they have a little bit of a funny feeling in the bottom of their stomachs because they're not sure they're quite that way themselves. You know what? When aged mothers start sitting down to teach young mothers how to be mommies, they feel the same way. They look at that list and they feel a little queasy about it because they're not so sure they did all that well themselves. And they're not so sure you can even teach this woman to actually be like that. You know what? This is all church life. This is the Christian life. It's the same funny feeling a teacher gets when she teaches math, and after a while she wonders if the student actually got it, but they look at the grades and they're high enough that they send them on to the next teacher. And this is the way truth is built. And that is, it is a program, it is a structure of perfect ideals. And the teacher requires the student to come up to the ideals, and you let the student know where they don't come up to the ideals, but you still keep working with the student even if they don't. And it's not the end of the day when the student doesn't come up to the ideals. It's not where you quit. It's just simply the revelation that there's still more work to do. And even as I learned to read in first grade, and here I am, 40 years later, I read this passage to you, and I did make one mistake. Y'all didn't throw me out and say, well, he never did learn to read, did he? You know what I did? I stopped, corrected, and kept on going. And when we were done, you said, he read Titus chapter 2. This is motherhood. This is bishopric. This is life. The ideal stands, and the requirement to measure up to the ideal stands. And when you don't make it, it's not the end of the story. You just keep right on going back for the ideal again. But this is the way this whole book is laid out. Bishops in the beginning of chapter 1, aged men, chapter 2, women, chapter 3, young men, chapter 3, verse 6, servants in chapter 2, verse 9, everyone, chapter 3, verse 1, put them in mind to be subject to principalities and powers, to obey, to be read, or don't talk evil. There's another punch list. And what we're doing is we are setting down the Christ-like ideals. We want to be like Jesus. And the church is a collection of people being like Jesus. And now we come back to this list here of how a woman who this list is addressed to is to be like Jesus. And in a sense, it's not really a Mother's Day tribute, but it will be some ideals for those of you. You can easily see that the center of this teaching is the young married mother. That's how the list works out. When you're done looking at it, your attention is drawn to the young married mother. And it's just given there as a way to set in order the things that are wanting. And I titled the message this morning, In Order, Womanhood. Because I know that any girl that's passing from child to adulthood has a number of these ideals that ought to be there in their lives. And really, if a young man is going to consider you to be a valuable mate in a marriage relationship, she needs to start working on this long before she ever says, I do. It's a bad business to start 2 weeks afterwards, because you won't get such a good foundation of some of these ideals if you only start after you're in the middle of it. But you can. That's the hope of the gospel. You always can start from today. And that's the way we intend to share this list today. Not only over in Bangladesh is there a world where people don't know nothing, where people know nothing and aren't doing anything. We live in that world ourselves. You see, one of the reasons why preachers have to preach and preach and preach and teachers have to teach and teach and teach is because there's always a first grade. Next year, Lighthouse School is going to get a collection of little boys and girls that don't know how to read, they don't know what numbers look like, they don't know how to write, and all you have to do is ignore those young people, and only a matter of time, you will have a society of rot. You see, we are in a deteriorating society at all times, and all we have to do is give it time and it will rot. And the teacher and the guide are the only salvation for that whole picture. And so we lift this list out again, just another time, because the last time whenever a preacher at this place ever talked about this list, since then, there might be a new mommy here, a young married lady here, just like, and actually there also might be an old lady here now. She's one that's supposed to be the teacher. And everything's shifting, and people take on the new roles. And this is the Bible way. Just like new students enter school, and old students graduate from school and become the next teachers in time, that dynamic of our own society, our own Christian society, is going on, and we have to promote it. Well, it says in verse 4 that these older, aged women, and I don't know what to ascribe that to. We'll just say the grandmas to be easy. But I'm kind of cobbling something together myself there. But it says these aged women are to teach the younger women. It reminds me of the scripture in Hebrews 5, verse 12, that talks about the reality that it is normal and expected that every last person becomes a teacher. He's talking about the work of Christ, and he says there's some of this part that it's hard for you to get, but it's high time you get this whole doctrine here in chapter 5 of Hebrews. For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God. And he's just simply paying recognition to the reality that everybody first hears, then learns, then becomes a teacher. This is as normal as the sun coming up. And a society that doesn't have it is going to be a dying society. Today's students are tomorrow's teachers. That is normal. And everybody here today is either a student or a teacher. And if you're a student today, get ready. Your teaching days are headed your direction. And if you don't, you're going to be a problem to the rest of us. Think about it. Older people are encouraged, these aged women are encouraged to embrace the teacher role. You know why the Bible has to say that? This is kind of embarrassing to say out loud. But do you know that by nature, the older people tend to condescend to the younger people? When's the last time you heard a grandma fuss and fume about how a young lady doesn't take care of her children? When's the last time a grandpa looked at the school students nowadays and said, well, they don't have it near like we did. We walked uphill through snow both ways, all through 880 days. We had it much worse. We had to stand out in the rain. That is the default setting of society, to condescend to the younger generation. We look, and I thought about that. I thought about that this week because I heard of two different cases where grandmas were fuming that the young mothers of their church just don't know how to raise children. That's just this week in our own circles. And that's not their job. It's their job to get off their rocking chairs and go teach those moms how to do it. It's right here in the Bible. But you know what? The default setting, and I found it interesting. I was flipping through Matthew Henry's commentary, and here's what he says about this verse. He says, older people are apt to be peevish and fretful, therefore need to be on guard for this. So a couple hundred years ago, a man in a study was picking up on this, that the grandmas knew how to fuss about the new moms. And Paul knew about it too. And he said, now you teach your aged women to teach their younger women how to be moms. Another commentator talked about this very thing too, how it's so typical for the aged people to feel like they are owed space, some freedom, and some praise because they did it. You know what's interesting? As I pondered over this, the truth is, though, that if you as an aged generation, older men and older women, embrace the teaching role of teaching it, it's going to deliver you from that self-destructing condescension I was just talking about. You can't have both in your heart. You can't look down on somebody. Show me a teacher that thinks it's her students or his students are stupid, and I'll tell you how good of a teacher they are without ever being in their schoolroom. You see, you can hardly be a teacher without having a heart for the student. And as soon as you give your heart to that student, it changes your whole view that is typically default. And so, here is this teaching that in these 8 points, there's a generation that is both responsible to teach it and to pass it on, and in doing so, it will set them free from the other destruction, which is native to us, and it'll be, well, that's how you have church. That's why it's here on how to build a church. So, you know, when we are the older ones teaching the younger ones, we tell our stories honestly. We don't come across like we never did anything stupid, because our lives are full of dumb things we did. Just tell your stories honestly. Tell them what you learned in the midst of your hard lesson. This will make you a valuable teacher. Makes you a good teacher. Tell them what you'd never do again. If you could do it all over, you wouldn't have done it that way. If I could do it over, I wouldn't start out with used appliances. It's strange. I had more money when I got married than 4 years later when they croaked. And so I should have bought them new that would have carried me through. Okay, that's something I learned. It's something I tell people when I've done it already when we're sitting around talking about a wedding. Let me tell you something. You probably forget this, but don't ever buy used appliances. That was a waste. And I pass it on. It was our mistake. It's what we learned. But you can also tell your successes about what you learned in wisdom and how it all worked out. It's such a beautiful thing when wisdom is passed along. You saw it in your grandparents, you worked it out in your own life, and you're passing it on to the next. Just amazing how that works. Well, let's go into these 8 points of orderliness. How you order a woman, a young married mother is going to order her world into something constructive that is worthwhile. And these are just little clips. We can make a lot out of them, but we're not going to make a lot out of them this morning because they're just given, and I want to just stir your thinking and move on to the next. Number one, we should teach these young women to be sober. Now, this means to be of sound mind, to be sane, to correct or discipline. And of course, that last part, to correct or discipline, is focusing both on what you do to yourself and what you do in your own teaching program. It has both aspects to it. This practice of sobriety, soberness, means that we first correct and discipline our own selves. It's true of the older women back there in verse 3, and it's true of the younger women as well. You see, one of the other things Matthew Henry said, and this is true as well, is that young people are apt to be eager and thoughtless. They're willing to try anything without thinking it through. And this is a problem. Just like it's a problem for the old generation to be somewhat rather condescending, it's a problem for the younger generation to be a tad on the airheaded side. They do things without thinking them through. They'll buy things without figuring out how they're going to pay for them. They'll just do things. And what really is beautiful is when you have a collection of believers that has both those elements in, where you have the older generation being the donkey with the heel set and the young people that are pulling to, let's do something for once. And if you embrace both of those, but both are going to have to respect each other. And the foundation that is laid down here for a godly young mother is that she is sober. There is some kind of discipline that is being developed and is present in her own life to set boundaries. And it's not always easy as a young person to listen in my eagerness to listen to somebody else's concern or carefulness. And somewhere in the tug of war, that has to be evened out. And if the younger one will receive from the older one, there is hope that the two together will make a beautiful product. But this thing of having a disciplined mind where you think through things and you look ahead and you say, well, since I don't know, it just stood out to me recently. I was talking with a 16-year-old and we were a young fellow and we were talking and we were talking about friendship and how you maintain friendship. And then we started talking about peer pressure and how what a big thing it is. And I noticed that he and I were thinking about a lot about the whole same package. And about the only difference I could sense was that he was missing experience on how all that stuff works out. That was the only difference. And I told him that. I said, you know what? I said, the only thing that's different between what you're saying and what I'm thinking is the reality that when you say it, I think of about five stories of how they worked out, and you can't. You haven't lived yet. That's the only difference. The truth that we were batting back and forth was identical. But the perspective of knowing that that path, done that way, in this story, led there. And if a young person is wise enough to know that that's the piece he's missing, and he should maintain his eagerness to get off of his seat and do something, that's good. But he needs to have that tempered by the aged person coming back and saying, let me tell you how some of that works out. That way you know how it's going to be. Number two, this woman is supposed to be taught, and she should develop a love for her husband. As far as I know, this is the only place in the scriptures where a woman, instead of being told to submit to her husband, is told to love her husband. Technically, the whole idea of being obedient to her husband in the at the latter part of verse 5, or the mid part of verse 5, is more comparative to the submission idea. But this here is basically saying she should develop the butterflies that she had all along from the first time they had their first date, or they went out together the first time, and she thought about what was coming, and finally he drove in the lane, and oh, you know, it goes through their heart. They just keep that alive. It means fondness and appreciation. She walks into the room, a group of people are there, and instead of saying, oh, there's my boyfriend, she says, oh, there's my husband. That's all it is. When he comes home, it's kind of like, now I know that familiarity tends to breed contempt. And if it doesn't breed contempt, it just breeds commonness. You know, if we only came to her house once a week or a time or two a week, there's a lot more time for the emotion to build up. Since we come home every night or sometimes several times a day, the same butterflies, yeah, our emotions aren't sustainable. I've said that before. You would go bonkers if you stayed that high all the time. But somewhere in the process of that whole relationship of being a wife, raising children, taking care of the needs of the house, answering the telephone, washing up the kitchen floor, getting the crumbs swept away, throw them in the trash can gets emptied, direct the children, you do the trash, and Thursdays get it out there. In the midst of all that, teach that young lady to keep alive that affection and fondness for the man that she married. It's very simple. We're told also that she should learn and continue to practice to love her children. Now the Bible in Isaiah 49 verse 15 asks this very fundamental question. We all know the answer to it. It says something like this. Can a woman forget her sucking child? In other words, if she gives birth to a little baby and she's tending and nursing that baby, does she forget about it? Oh, where did my baby get to? Answer is no. But you know what? Raising a child takes somewhere between 6 to 20 years, depending on how quick you wash your hands of it. And that's long enough to forget your child. You see, the whole time, if I am a young mother, the whole time that I'm raising that child, I'm carrying myself around too. And you know what happens? Give it time. The day will come that you will war between taking care of yourself and taking care of this demanding little whatever you say at that time. And if I love myself just a tiny bit more than I love that little child, whether they are 2, 10, or 16, I don't even need to speculate what the end's going to be. I am certain, quoting another writer, that when Hitler's mother looked into the little baby's eyes, she saw a gentleman that was going to change the world, and even if he never get that done, she would still love him. I don't know what happened when he went from that cooing little baby to the monster that was destroying the world. And I don't know what his mother's love to her was, but it is normal and it is basic and it is expected that the fondness and appreciation that I just talked about in a husband is the same word that is used toward your children. But the baby cries. The toddler gets into messes. The school child brings a lot of homework home, and I don't get my knitting done, or I don't get my own little personal space, and I speak of these things from a father's perspective because that's how it feels to me. Maybe I'm missing it, but it sounds a little bit like that's where the test would be. You see, this is a fallen world, and babies don't coo forever, and they don't smell like the bubble bath that you wash them in all the time. And after a while, there's a test. And sometimes things start to spill out that you never would have guessed would have come when she was giving the child the first hug. And that's because what's sloshing out was in the cup all along. And something has to be dealt with, whether it's, and these tests will come. And we teach, love the child, have that affection, maintain it, seek their highest good. Put yourself, become the servant of that child. And he will grow. And once a year, he might give you a card and say, thanks, Mom. And if they don't, well, then the Bible directive is still there. And we're still not set free to express our own selfishness in that situation. Number 4, it is to be discreet. Now, this means self-controlled, sound, safe in mind. There's a lot of things we could point out here, but I think that the part I want to talk about just a little bit here is the idea of, when I think about a self-controlled mind, and I know something about womanhood and motherhood and how similar it is to manhood and fatherhood, but maybe even a little bit more intense. And that is the reality that in raising children and in being a wife, there's always a side trail that's available to go down into worry. In the curse, God said to the woman that her desire is going to be toward her husband, and that's a little bit baffling, but it seems as I study into it, it's talking about this thing that she is going to be by nature an insecure person. And she's going to look for her security in something. And it's very common for the young married mother to carry a little quiet, silent bag of worries. Maybe they worry about the safety of their children. Do they look a little peaky? Are they the right percentile? Had they gotten high enough and not growing the way? Well, that concern can be okay, but it can also be dominating. And at that point, we are in a situation where discretion is going out the window because worry is replacing it. From time to time, I've heard these tales of these wives that worry and flutter and twist their hands as their husbands go off to work. And they wonder if today will be the day that he never comes back. What a wasted life if he comes back for 64 years and it never happened. What a wasted life. Teach them to be discreet, to discipline your mind. Finances. Where's the money going to come from? I tell my wife, let me worry about it, and I do. But at least she doesn't have to. She can be discreet. But we need to learn to trust the Lord, both in the way we talk about things and the way we think about things. You know, especially if you're raising children, the bills pile up. And an incredible amount of them come out of nowhere. Broken arms, orthodontist. I think he's going to need 4 years, and that will be $5,000. Huh, we didn't put that in the budget at the beginning of this whole game. No, we didn't, but we are now. Lord, how's it going to all work out? The possibility of unforeseen things. But we need to teach our young women that they are empowered to be the incredible recyclers of their world. A woman can do so much for the home, her husband and her children, by simply saving. No, she's not out wearing the bread. And so many stories that I look at where she does try to go out and earn for the family, that requires daycare, and that requires this, and that requires that, and after a while, even though their gross income is double, their gross expenses are double as well. And the bottom line is they aren't any farther ahead than the woman who just sits down and accepts this role and says, I will make the most out of little, and that is a tremendous gift that she can give to her family. And we admire our wives and our mothers for how they may do in the realities of life. Stewardship. Her stewardship is as valuable as her husband's paycheck. Talks about here about that the women ought to be chaste. Now this just means proper, clean, innocent, modest, and pure. It simply means that we need to teach this young married woman to be morally pure, to be modest, to be chaste, to be reserved. You see, when God created the woman, he refined two things in her that apparently do not seem to have happened in the man. And the one is in beauty. A woman will win a beauty contest over a man on any given day. It's just, we're dirtier. We are, she is twice removed from the dirt. We are only once removed. Just read it in your Bible. But the other thing that appears to have happened is that the woman by nature tends to have an edge on creativity as well. Not always, but a lot. And when you take somebody who is twice beautiful and twice creative, that's quite a dynamite package. And every woman in Hollywood knows this, and she sells it with all of her might. And as a Christian woman, one of the generational truths that we pass along is that the beauty of the woman is for her man, and the creativity is also to meet the needs of that unit. Far less to use that creativity to rule the nations, far less to use that creativity to compel people to part with their dollars in advertising. That's what the world has done with it. And so we teach this thing of modesty. Think about, ladies, how you dress yourself, because you have been endowed with gifts that the rest of society doesn't have. And you can either sell it for control and power, or you can cover it for God's glory. And There's just so many ways how you make your clothing. If you're going to wear the clothing that you're asked to wear, these are things that need to be taught. Now, this is a woman that is managing her house, the ways of her house. And she is probably the number one person that is going to provide the dressing for the children as well. Well, Pop will give some directions when he's not all wound up in the midst of his world and he sees something that gets his attention. But so many times, what our children wear are not their decisions, they're the mom's decisions. It's pretty simple truth when you stop and think about it. And so what your child wears or doesn't wear so much comes down to this mom, not really the child himself. Thought about that not long ago when we got this baby announcement, and then the baby was laying there stark naked except for a towel thrown around it. And I said, well, I'm sure the baby didn't figure that out. The mom came up with that idea. It was her idea to take all the clothing off and take the picture and pass it out. And I'm just saying that this godly woman is chaste. And maybe that's an idea where somebody was eager but didn't think it all through. If you're going to take label clothes, pick it up at Salvation Army and put it on your little boy, when are you going to tell him that label clothes makes a statement he doesn't want to grow up to be? See, these are your decisions, not his or everybody else's. And as the older generation teaches the younger one to be chaste, these are some of the things you'll be talking about. Keepers at home. Now that one's so simple. Strong's Concordance says it's a stayer at home. I guess that's old-fashioned. That's why it's in there. Well, it's also what the Greek word meant. Domestically inclined, it also says in Strong's. Many years ago, I heard a message on the home, and the preacher said that in real life, the woman builds a nest and the man builds an empire. And she has this house, and I just talked to a young couple recently, and they're looking for another place. And he says that really all he's looking for is some land that he can be outside and do some hunting, and she doesn't care if it's a really nice house on Main Street. And they have to get together on this. Well, that's exactly right. They got to get together on it. But it's so normal. It's so natural. It's what happens. She is, and we teach our young ladies to be this keeper at home. This is your nest. Build it, line it, fluff it, get it comfortable, make it nice, keep it clean, wash your dishes every day. So many simple little things, but when they are not done, oh, the chaos and the turmoil that comes out of it. But in the keeping at home, she also keeps the environment, and then children know that it's okay or it's not okay to knock a glass of water over at the kitchen table, eating a meal. These are things that fall so domestically under the mother's ability to create and maintain an environment. Number 7 is that she should be taught to be good. And this focuses now on the word in Strong's is benefit. And what it all simply means is that her time and talents and energies are put into bringing out the best in other people. You see, when I look at my home that I grew up in, I think about all the things my mother did for me and the benefit she was to me. And children are doing this all the time. And what's supposed to really be happening on this Mother's Day is there is a homage paid to the goodness of their mother. I had started to prepare a message on the Shunammite woman until I was told you all listened to that 3 weeks ago, then I had to change my mind. But one of the things that I was impressed with is that when it says that she was a good woman, the one cross-reference that I was looking at said that word in Hebrew meant she was in high society, but that book was written in the Chaldean tongue, which meant that she had a fear of doing the wrong thing. Or in other words, she feared to sin. This showed great piety. And you know, as a mother practices this fear of God, this respect for the right thing to do. It is what channels her goodness into her children and into her husband, because she is a godly woman. Piety is the complicated Greek term. And it just simply means to do the right thing, righteousness. She sets the stage of when we get up and who packs the lunches and who, but while it seems like a lot of structure, what's really coming out of this is the reality that everybody served. You see, if there is no structure, then you have this chaos when the school van pulls in because nothing was prepared. And a mother who just simply says, now we're going to, when the alarm rings, children, you're getting out of bed. And today, Willie, you're going to pack the lunches. But Barbara, you get them out and wash them out and set them in a row. And when the school van pulls in at 7:40 or whatever it is, there they are, and they grab them and they go out the door. And there's no shrieking, where's my book bag? I didn't mention any of that. I didn't know where to fit it all in. But there is so much of this that is intertwined. And I am amazed at how we make our lives more complicated by being undisciplined. It's incredible. The same amount of time. Okay, when do you get to church? When do you get to school? Are you going to be there on time, before time, or after time? The truth of the matter is, we live that close that you can speed like crazy and gain 32 seconds. It's the same amount of time all the time. It's all in when you start and how you go about it once you've started. And a mother who teaches her family well and is good is one that understands how to first discipline herself and then move through the process. And people look back on it and say, she was good. She was a good mom. You know why? Because they saw that she benefited their lives. Last of all, obedient to their husbands. This is the idea of subordination. This is a world where both parties know who is who. The man is the leader, the woman is the subordinate, and there is no room for cruelty or selfishness in either role. Anything less than honor and respect and cooperation and coordination is wrong. We tend to get funny feelings about this term of submission because we're so afraid we might get abused, and some people do. But it's no different than being a centurion in the Roman army. You have 100 people under you and a captain over you. Not be a good centurion. Find your place, stand in your place, and serve in your place. And this woman is one that is going to learn to be obedient to her husband. She's going to be an extension of him, and there will be great benefit that comes out of this teamwork. And she will find freedom in not having to deal with some issues because she doesn't have to. And this is the Christian ideal. Obedient to their husbands. Well, godly womanhood is a proper thing, but it also is supposed to be a generational thing. It is where students come up in the school and they learn and they practice and they learn. And when they get out of school, they turn into the next teachers for the next school. And this is the dynamics of Christian church in Titus chapter 2. May the Lord bless you, moms, as you learn and as you practice and then as you teach godly womanhood.